Well, hello and good morning and or good day, good afternoon, wherever you are. I'm delighted to present to you this morning another channel drop-in, and even more delighted, in fact, to be joined by Margaret Adam, AVP Tech Ecosystems at IDC today. Margaret, thanks ever so much for taking the time to join us on the channel drop-in here. Would you mind doing maybe 20 or 30 seconds just to introduce yourself, who you are, what you do, where you come from?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Ben, and thanks for inviting me. So in spite of the accents, I'm actually based in London, so coming to you from my home office in Southwest London in Richmond. So I lead a group within IDC, which is quite a diverse group, but really looks at all aspects of the tech ecosystem. So we have a team that looks at the services industry, professional services, managed services, strategy consulting services, and kind of the enterprise buying behavior with those services type companies. We have a team that looks at SMB and SMB buying behavior. We have a team that looks at tech startup ecosystems, and a team that looks at partnering ecosystems. And I guess that's really the hats I'm wearing today. I'm also part of a collaborative practice, which look at a really, really interesting part of the industry, which is this idea of industry ecosystems, which I'll probably touch on a little bit today.
Brilliant. That's great. Thank you. Really looking forward to this, actually. Really looking forward to this because I think, you know, you'll be able to deliver a slightly alternative view, because I know that as we were chatting in the kind of the preamble there, just I know that the IDC has been doing a lot of research over the last year, given all the circumstances that we're all finding ourselves in, you know, regular monthly, weekly, twice monthly research that's been looking into you know, the impact of digital and how the channel, how partners are responding to that, and also an element of, I think, an element of resiliency. So maybe if you might be able to talk us through a little bit of maybe that research, some of the findings, and how you're seeing that response to you know, maybe a new form of resilient partner out there.
Yeah, perfect. So I mean, I think for me, there's a lot of lessons that have been learned from the pandemic. And I guess the challenge is, how do you take those lessons and actually benefit from them, right? You know, what we saw was that many partners, in fact, I would even argue most partners, proved to be pretty resilient, right? There were some that obviously benefited from new customer requirements as they started to adjust to the pandemic. There were projects delayed and restructured, but there were new opportunities, obviously, as companies needed to flip to remote working and so on. But what we saw was that partners who were able to pivot quickly, who were able to reallocate, let's say, field resources into more customer success roles, who were able to launch new solutions and services, were able to embrace remote selling and get off the events drug. You know, they had a pretty good year. Many of the partners that we speak to are still hiring. In fact, skills, or the scarcity thereof, is still one of the top conversations, right? So I think, you know, I wouldn't say surprisingly resilient, but the scale of that resiliency was really impressive. But I would caution this, right, is that I think in talking to business owners and so on, there's still a degree of uncertainty about what the future is going to hold, right? And I think this is true of customers and it's true of partners. So you spoke about resiliency, and actually one of the initiatives I've been very involved in at IDC is developing our view on what does business resiliency mean in the post-COVID era, right? I mean, I don't know if you've heard the term VUCA. Yeah, so it's a term to describe an environment which is volatile, I must get this right now, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, right? And I think it's a great term because I think that's what we're all facing right now. And what we expect is that this kind of volatility and uncertainty and complexity is going to continue in the near to midterm, and possibly even longer. And I think another lesson from COVID is we really realize how globally interconnected we are. And whilst it gives us a lot of benefits, it also means that other really systemic crises are likely in the future. And these may not be as big as the COVID-19 pandemic, right? Let's hope not, but they could be, right? And so I think the question facing many businesses right now, including partner businesses, is how do we take what happened to us during the pandemic, learn from it, improve our resiliency in the face of the next crisis, be that a big or a small crisis, right? So what we learned and what we try to apply is that what we've seen, right, and you and I were chatting about this earlier, is that companies that made investments in technology, particularly digital technologies, things like cloud, have allowed them to really maintain a level of operations that wouldn't have been possible before, right? And this allowed companies to operate and continue to operate effectively. But for some, and particularly those who are really quite advanced in this, they were able to pivot their businesses very quickly and capitalize on those changed customer demands or go into new customer segments or even develop new digital services or managed services and so on. And so what we've really seen now is that digital really underpins the modern business, right? But it's often an aspect that is ignored in traditional approaches to business resiliency. Because business resiliency, when you talk to a CFO, is typically focusing on safeguarding specific functions or businesses kind of at a piecemeal basis and really focused on financial resiliency in terms of liquidity. And then you've got your traditional approaches to IT resiliency, which typically focus on business continuity, disaster recovery, which have been challenged, right? Because actually digital became the way for companies to operate, right? So our view is that we need to reframe this view of digital resiliency, because in order to survive in the future, companies will need to be able to not only respond and adapt to either an extreme change like the pandemic or to incremental change, right? And so this is what we're talking about when we talk about this idea of digital resiliency, right? It's the ability to adapt to business disruptions, leveraging digital capabilities to restore business operations, but critically and really important in terms of that forward-looking view, to be able to capitalize on those changed conditions.
So are you saying then that or are you hearing or are you seeing, you know, some of the research results and analysis that you've done, has the big change happened? Have we finally got there? And are we looking forward to a future that you know, deals with change in a much better way, or is it about a slightly new behavior that we're seeing based on the lessons learned that maybe we weren't as prepared as we thought we were?
Yeah, I think it varies from business to business, to be honest. I mean, the way we try to describe it is in 2020, I think we saw a lot of investments around digital adaptation, right? So as companies move to remote working or to pivot to new services, or had weaknesses, right, that were really exposed by the pandemic. And this will continue. Some were better than others, right? But that will continue. But then it's also accelerating digital transformation in general. And so I think you're going to see these investments around digital and tech really focus on two streams. One around digital acceleration, right? How do we get that competitive advantage leveraging digital? And the second around digital resiliency, and the two are very, very interconnected. And, you know, we've done research around this, and it's a mixed bag when we look at it with the lens of digital resiliency, right? I think most people are actually in pretty early stages where they've adapted, but they haven't necessarily been able to capitalize to the degree that they could. And so I think the next year you're going to see this prioritization of acceleration versus resiliency is really going to be dependent on that organization's maturity, really, yeah. Digital maturity.
And so what's the implication of all this? Because, you know, we kind of see mixed results in the media in terms of, you know, some, you know, I would argue the majority of channel partners, for example, you know, doing quite well in terms of the response that's being required, dependent upon areas of specialism. I understand that. But what do we think, or what are you seeing? What is the implication of this going forward for partners? Because obviously we've known that for decades that, you know, the channel, the indirect channel, has survived on face-to-face. It survived on interaction. It survived on people and people, you know, and whether that be people in a one-to-one meeting or group meetings, or you know, the many events that that we see around the world happening, suddenly stopped. So are we going to see you know, greater acceptance, greater agility, adaptation, and launch of new ways of doing business, and you know, and not necessarily going back to the old face-to-face way of doing things? What's the implication going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes both ways. I think partners are starting to recognize that digital selling or digital marketing is not just something, okay, we better do to get MDF, but actually if we want to build a pipeline, this is kind of what we've got to do, right?
Was it ever that simple? Are we allowed to say that?
Probably not, but let's be honest, right?
Yeah.
But also there's a sophistication to this, right? I think, you know, most partners are heavily underinvested in terms of their marketing capabilities, right? Even big partners that typically won't have more than three or four people. And in the past, there's three or four people who were marketing people really, really focused on events, right? And that took up the majority of the time. So I'm generalizing a bit. There are partners that do really great stuff, obviously, but I think, you know, the relevance or strategic importance of digital marketing and being able to articulate your value proposition, your positioning, what it is that you do and what it is that you can provide, is something that partners are having to get right. And it, you know, I think it's going to become more important. You know, we often talk about being able to articulate business outcomes, be able to, you know, talk about what problem you're going to solve. That's really going to be critical in terms of how partners position themselves, right? Because what customers want right now is, you know, they want to understand, okay, these are my business priorities, these are the outcomes that I'm looking to achieve within my workforce, within my operations, within my finance department, whatever it is, right? And what they need is help in saying, okay, what are kind of the specific projects or what we call at IDC use cases, right? What are the funded, where can I get budget to help me improve either resiliency in this or to launch a new offering or to automate whatever process, right? This is a business priority. And then what they want for partners is what kind of technology stack can help me achieve that outcome. And so, you know, being able to articulate your value proposition in that business outcome language is going to become more important when you're using it in a digital manner, right? If you meet someone face-to-face, you say, oh, well, we did this project for so-and-so. It was a lot easier, a lot more organic, but now it's about how do you package that, articulate that in a digital manner, right? Which is a sophistication. You're a marketing person, you understand this. It's a sophistication in terms of defining that value proposition and what is it you can do, right?
So I think there's a couple of points there, actually. So firstly, are we going to see an expansion of roles and responsibilities where this might be hitting recruitment in terms of, let's say, you know, maybe partners, distis and vendors needing to expand team members, needing to expand teams that are dedicated to this activity, where before there might have been there might have been a little bit light on numbers, should we say. We know that people double up in terms of role and responsibilities, you know, and they just kind of go, well, Cam can do that, or Pam can do that, or the channel marketing manager can take care of all of those things. Maybe teams are going to start expanding where there's a need for new knowledge to be brought in. Obviously, I hope that people will continue to outsource to dedicated channel agencies. But I think there's likely to be an impact on recruitment in terms of bringing in new and alternative people with different knowledge around how to take those propositions and messages to market, and to and through distis and partners as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're going to see, and there's a couple of things that are feeding into this. So it's that business language is a different kind of skill, right? There is the digital marketing piece, which, you know, there's a lot of content flying around. So to have good content that gets picked up and noticed is a skill. And that's a new type of hire, I think, for many partners. But then there's this whole idea around partner IP, right? As partners are starting to develop their own intellectual property and packaging services and creating new applications and so on, and starting to sell that not as a once-off but in a repeatable manner. Yeah. You start to need product management skills, right? And product marketing skills, which typically are set in the vendors, but I think you're going to see more and more partners bringing in that product management, product marketing as they look to scale their own IP.
Yeah.
I think also it means to change the relationship between vendors and partners as well, right? Because the challenge for many partners is not just your value proposition, it's your joint value proposition with whatever vendor you're representing. And so it needs to be a bit of a more two-way street. So again, I think this is putting pressure on vendors as well in terms of their partner account manager skills, who need to be able to have that, all right, what is our joint value proposition? What is it that we bring you? What is it that you bring us? And how do we jointly go to market with that? So that partnering function and being able to strategically partner is going to become more important.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Absolutely think you're right. Wrote a paper on it. So I definitely think the role and relationship and becoming more of a two-way street between partners and vendors is what's going to begin to happen more and more. And the way that partners are already starting to demand more of their vendors. It's less of that kind of top-down dictation now, and more of the partner-up requirement and demand that they're placing on vendors in terms of, right, we're not going to events anymore. What else can you do to help us? What else is there that is available to us? Yes, we see your campaigns in a box, but we can't execute them. Can you give us help? Can you give us training? Can you give us education? Not just on the product piece. We get the product piece, right? We sell your product. Therefore, by default, we like it. what we'd really like
hopefully
to work with. Yeah. yeah. It's an interesting one, isn't it? But we get the product piece and we love the fact that yours is a little bit shinier and slightly faster than the other one. And that's great. But actually, in order to take that to market with a sensible message around proposition, joint proposition, as you say, and the impact that shiny, fast product can have, or piece of software or security can have on our customers, we'd really like some assistance in how we kind of craft that message and take it to market, rather than one that just says, exactly, hey, check out this cool new thing, we're going to sell it to you. And so actually, that was my other point earlier. Is this potentially, and I know this is somewhat controversial because it's been a question around for absolutely decades, but are we going to see finally some kind of joining together and mutual understanding of sales and marketing and the impact that marketing can have on sales and the impact that sales can have on marketing? Or are we going a little bit too far with that hope?
Oh, I don't know. I've been saying that for 6-7 years, right? I genuinely have. Countless presentations I said, listen, I don't want to sit in a meeting room where your marketing people are staring out of the window because you're talking about products, and your salespeople are the only ones getting trained and going to the vendor events and getting all of this insight, right? Your sales and marketing people need to be lockstep, and your marketing people need to be as trained as your salespeople, right? They're part of that sales process. And I think there's a blurring of roles already. Absolutely. And I think fortunately now with COVID, it has forced a rethink in terms of, okay, we can't just rely on our traditional marketing activities, right? It's been
we've
okay.
Got validation. We've got a bit of validation, haven't we? Sorry there, but it was just, I think, really important. We've got validation now, because actually digital is far easier to track and report on and manage and see stuff come out of the other side, because it's there. And if we can demonstrate, if we can validate that activity as marketeers to the business and to salespeople, to say, well, we've done this activity, we nurtured it over a period of time, there's been some incubation here, there's some feedback, and actually now we believe, based on all of the information that you gave us in the profile and the brief and the activity that we agreed, we think these guys are sales conversation ready. That has to bring the relationship a bit closer together, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'd hope so. I'd hope so. And I think, I mean, in the previous drop-in, I'd listened to that one with Gemma, where you spoke about account-based marketing. Hmm. I mean, for me, that is the direction that we're ultimately going to go. And you're not going to be able to do that effectively unless you have that alignment, right? So I think... I remember a couple of years ago, I'm not going to say which vendor, one of the vendors used to do something really, really cool around, you know, a specific event for marketeers, for channel marketeers, so for the marketing people within channels, and came up amazing content, amazing advice, amazing guidance. But the feedback that they got was, this is great. We go back to our business owners and they say, well, there's no budget for this, or it's not a priority right now, right? And so yeah. they actually came back and said, look, please invite the owners of our businesses to yeah. this, so they could, you know, kind of see it. So I think that's changed. I don't think that, I think there's still been a lot of business coming in from existing customers last year. But I think when you start to realize that it's becoming more difficult to build a pipeline and to get net new customers in, that pressure will accelerate.
I think we're getting there. But actually, I'm really interested in a term that you've not mentioned whilst we've been recording, but it was something that we talked about just beforehand. And this is this phrase, channel metamorphosis. I'm so keen for you to tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, no, happy to do that. So this is actually every year, like all analyst firms do, we do our predictions. And this is the one prediction that I thought was quite worthwhile to bring up is, we've all seen it, right? You know, this part of the channel is going to disappear. This part of the channel is going to become irrelevant. And the reality is for us is that the channel in all of its flavors has always had an incredible capacity to reinvent itself, right? To renew, to revitalize. These are business owners that operate in challenging conditions where vendors change strategy fairly regularly, where there's always been a lot of acquisition and change. And it's a fast moving industry. And every time there's a new channel chief, the strategy changes, right? So so partners are pretty agile to begin with. And I think people underestimate that. So you know, we don't think that partners, even the more traditional partners, are going to cease to exist or go out of business, right? But what we do expect is that at least one in four partners will fundamentally change who they are and what they do. And 2021 is really going to be the year where we start to see that play out, right? So, you know, as much as we've seen positivity in terms of many partners and their performance, yeah, there's still quite a lot, close to 25% actually, that are experiencing significant revenue declines, right? And starting to see that revenue hit. And then in the same breath, we're seeing a lot of PE acquisition activity, yeah. so private equity funding coming into the channel. And what that means is there's money to grow and to scale and to pivot and to develop new services, right? So you've got that. And then the third dynamic is you've got this incredible startup ecosystem, right? Many of whom are partners, right? And these really niche capabilities. So we're going to see this metamorphosis, really. And where partners are going to either go smaller and really focused, or are going to start to collaborate and create their own ecosystems where they work with some of these kind of innovative startups, for example, yeah. Or look to scale through acquisition and or scale organically as well, right? So you're going to see a pretty significant metamorphosis. And this is really going to challenge vendors, to be honest, because vendors are going to have to really think about, you know, what they view their partners as may not be what their partner looks like in 6 to 7 months' time, right? Yeah. So they need to be able to understand that landscape in real time and adjust their strategy quickly and stop trying to box partners into very specific camps, right?
Because that's mindset and behavior change, isn't it? Because we've been used to vendors being in charge like the whole time, all the time. And it sounds like what you're saying and what you're seeing is that, you know, yeah, the partners are starting to dictate a little bit, and they are starting to say, like, that what you were doing before no longer meets every one of our needs, and therefore exactly. We'd like something a little bit different, and we hope that that's okay. Because for the most part, it should be okay, right? Because if this is being driven either by need or by genuine realization of opportunity, so therefore expansion, then actually that should be, either one of those will be good and beneficial to the vendor, right? So it's surely it has to be within their best interest to respond to those new needs.
It is, absolutely. But they've got their own organizational challenges, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a classic example is ISV, right? So ISV used to be a really well understood, if you like, group. These are software development companies that either extended or developed their own applications. But now, you know, as we move to software defined, as we move to this idea of repeatable IP, resellers, services partners, managed service providers, all those different labels, if you like, are starting to build in their own software assets and starting to function like ISVs. But they also resell and they also service, right? Yeah. So if you as a vendor are trying to group them into an organizational silo that you have and make it difficult for them to develop or to participate in your marketplace or whatever, right? If you make that difficult and burdensome and you've got requirements for this program, requirements for that program, requirements for this program, and you make it just too difficult, you know, the partners are going to say, look, the overhead in dealing with this vendor is just too tough, right? We want to be able to work with you in multiple ways, and we want the flexibility to be able to do that. And so I think that's going to be a bit of a challenge for some vendors.
I think it will be, won't it? Because again, as you say, you know, we've been so used for so long to, you know, partner programs, for example, we've been so used to so long to there being, you know, whether it be the precious metal structure or the bucket, you fit in this bucket and therefore you're going to get that forever and ever, amen. That's going to change, isn't it? So is there going to be a responsibility, or is there already a responsibility on vendors to be more flexible in their approach to their partner programs and their overall partner experience in terms of how they ask certain things of partners, but also how they respond to the needs of their partners?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I don't think this is new. I think it's been accelerated now, right? Yeah. And I think, you know, I think any business owner is going, right, you know, I really need to prioritize. And there's a process of really thinking about how much do we get out of this relationship, right? And there's a huge overhead to dealing with a vendor. And I think vendors underestimate that. And when you're one vendor of 20, right? It has to make sense.
That's the thing that we talk about quite a lot, actually, impact. Quite often we see that vendors don't always address both sides of impact. So there's quite often the addressing of the positive impact. You can sell our stuff, it's going to be great, you'll make loads of margin, we'll support you with sales and marketing, and we'll get you trained and all of those things. Positive impact, hooray. But actually, quite often they don't always address the less than positive impact that becoming or being a partner could have on that business. Time, resource, motivation, people, time to value, time to transaction, ongoing education programs, enablement, comms, all of those things where a business owner is well within their rights to kind of go, hey, look, I'd really like to tell your staff, but if I'm going to have to dedicate X number of people and X amount of time before I start to see any revenue roll in, then do you know what? I might just stay over here because these guys have got it nailed. And that's really affecting partner experience. So, yeah, we kind of talk about positive impact, but I think we also need to be more aware and talk more about less than positive impact, because that's super important in terms of recruitment and retention.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And don't underestimate how challenging it is for partners. And, you know, a classic example of this is specialization, right? I'm a big fan. I think partners should specialize. I think there is a lot to be said to it, whether that's at an industry level, whether that's at a, you know, going deep in cyber, for example, right? But having that specialization makes it easier for customers to understand what you can do. It gives a level of comfort. It's great. But every vendor's pushing the specialization part, right? You talk to partners and they're like, look, I've got, you know, 30 field engineers. If I want to put them on all these specialization programs, they'd be training for the next 11 months.
Exactly.
I actually need to get revenue for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's always this kind of, we talk about this idea of partner empathy. And I think that's something that any vendor should think about, is put yourself in your partner's shoes. Yeah. Go through that onboarding process. How is it really, right? Go through problem resolution. Go through a special bid process and really think about it from the perspective of a partner who doesn't have as many resources as you and has got pretty challenging customers, right? I think vendors need to get simpler, more flexible. I think partners are going to prioritize a lot more. And I think this metamorphosis comes with its own overhead, right? Because I think the hard thing for partners to decide is not what we should do. There's so much stuff you can do in tech, but what you shouldn't do, right? And we're big advocates of partner-to-partner collaboration, right? And I think it's becoming, it's just sensible, right? I'm an ecosystems person, but it's absolutely sensible to what's core, what are we good at, where are we the A team, and then where do we can do it, but it's not really our core, don't do it, work with another partner there.
Bring it in. No, absolutely. And I think that is just, you know, on those, normally I kind of say, do you want to offer any final words of wisdom? But actually, I think in this case, you just have, which is a perfect way to wrap up, you know, looking at the vendor piece, the partner piece, and the whole ecosystem piece, and, you know, how that's going to help to drive the continued success of the channel, the new channel, and the metamorphosis of the channel that we all live and love. So, Margaret, thank you so much. That was wonderful. I really enjoyed that, and I feel like we could probably go on for hours.
Started on ecosystem.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, maybe in that case, we take your advice and we say, let's do a special edition focused on ecosystems only. Maybe that's the follow up. Maybe that's the follow up.
Awesome. That's been great. Absolutely great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure entirely. Thank you so much for joining us. Everyone listening, watching, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, thanks again. Thanks, Margaret. From AVP Tech Ecosystem is the short version of the title. AVP Tech Ecosystems, IDC, Margaret Adam, thank you so much. And I've been Glenn Robertson at Pure Channels, the channel agency. This is another edition of The Drop-In. There will be more to come. Thanks ever so much. And we will be online again soon.
Thank you.